And what they are motivated by, it's almost palpable, and you may be feeling it too in your chests or guts, whether it's at the tribunals for an ecological crisis point or the community rights, is a concern for using a wider time frame for those who come after. It's as if we realize we cannot check out of this historical opportunity, this moment, this planet moment, this planetary time, and leave it like this for the generations to come. It's as if I feel that we're hearing as we open not only our own group, but as we look at our dare to feel pain for the suffering of our world, we're feeling it also for those who come after us, who will inherit a denuded and droughted and contaminated world, dead oceans with great plastic gyres and contaminated beings and clear-cut forests. And rivers that can hardly meet the sea. So it's in what's happening now in this holy impatience is where it seems like we're opening up to the voices of those who are coming after us. Or we're beginning to realize we're ancestors. And it's not okay to leave them this without doing everything we can. Not out of guilt, but out of love. Stay clear of guilt, because guilt isolates you, because it's not you who did it, it's we did it together. So we have to respond together. And you feel the excitement of what can happen. You catch the excitement of what was happening in Cochabamba and what was happening in what was the last meeting? It was in Vienna of the ICANW. So I'd like to tell you what has happened with my own and what we do in the work that reconnects around time. That it would seem that our experience, our relationship to time itself has been altered. We have become accustomed in our psyche and our culture to a one-way arrow of time, from the past to the future, only in one direction. And there we are in a little box in the middle. That's our present time. And the past is over, it's done with, it's finished. It's irretrievable. You don't have to, you can't hang on to it. Even an old building, it's okay to destroy them. It's over. And the future is just an abstraction. We're still always in this present. You never reach it. It just recedes in front of you. and even the past and the future with our market forces, depending on growth, and growth means efficiency in doing things faster and pulling in the profits faster and getting more. This is speeding up. It's called the great acceleration. Mining here, mining there, grab that land. So there's an acceleration. Don't we feel it in our lives?
Yes.
You don't need to say amen, sister, but just a nod or two. What opened me up to what's happened with time was an obsession kind of with nuclear waste. Once I started with the despair work at all, I got an anonymous call one day. I've never written this down or told about it before, but this was this call from a guy who identified himself as being in the Navy, and that he said, he just begged me, he said, if you want us to look at what is hard to look at, please look at what we're doing with the nuclear and what we're doing to life. And so apparently he had been, we've used the Navy a lot in our nuclear testing in the Pacific. And so I did. I couldn't do it alone. So I thought, I'm going to make a study group, a study action group. And I got on the phone, and I called a bunch of people from different walks of life that were my friends. Hey, listen, I want to, would you like to join me in finding out about nuclear waste? What it is, how it's handled, what we can do. And I didn't want experts, but I did let in one nuclear engineer, one cosmologist. You may know the work of Brian Swim. He joined us. A kindergarten teacher, a dancer, an environmental lawyer. You need all kinds of an anthropologist. And we looked at what this is. And how, and in the process, I learned how mammoth it is from the mining tailings, mountains of them, and mill tailings, all the way up to the irradiated fuel rods from the reactors. And there's just a humongous amount, and we still don't know what to do with it, except stick it on the ground, out of sight and out of mind. But the last deep repository we made, which is down in Carlsbad, New Mexico, has had to be closed because of explosions down there. We don't know. At any rate, we learned together how toxic it is, the birth deformities and the stillbirths and the cancers and leukemias generated, you know. And we learned about how long it lasts. I'm plutonium's only a quarter of 240,000 years, but what we use in depleted uranium, which is now a weapon in almost all our military activities, do you know what the half-life of that is? Are you dying to know? It's 4.5 billion years. That's just the half-life. So I thought, it's getting mythic because that's the age we impute to the Earth. So I said, well, how are we going to take care of this? And I describe in Widening Circles, my memoir, how I, in a chapter called The Poison Fire, how I went around with some of my pals to talk to people in Los Alamos and in Westinghouse and so who were working with this, what their plans were. And so then I figured, well, who shall I ask then? And I thought, well, that leaves the future ones, because that'll really matter to them. They'll want to know, what did those ancestors do with it? Hope they didn't hide it out of sight and out of mind. I hope that they put it someplace where we know how to fence it in and keep it out of the biosphere and protect ourselves. I hope they left us some stories about it, how they came to make it. I hope they left us some information. So I thought, well, the future ones are the ones to ask. Now, the problem is you can't ask them when time is just a one-way arrow, right? So I thought, well, we can use our moral imagination, and we began role-playing, talking with them. And what came through us as we, with full intention and in service to Mother Earth and deep time, we began to call this work deep time work. That's when we heard the phrase, the poison fire. Oh yeah, we heard about the poison fire. Because this generation that we're in, even the youngest of us and the oldest of us here, we are the generation that the future ones will look back on and say, they made the poison fire. That might be our distinguishing character. It's the longest lasting gift. So this work generated in the, I want you to come to some of the workshops and some of the intensives, but we do engage in the deep time work, and both working with, walking the path with the ancestors, going back, walking that, harvesting the gifts of the ancestors, also going into the future. And